on this week's show. Disappointment, devastation for Margate as they're relegated. Player coach Ben Greenhall talks us through it.
There's been a lot of excitement, there's been a lot of buzz, and it looked like the miracle was going to happen. We closed the 10-point gap to nothing. And then obviously it's a massive shame that Horsham didn't go and get a result. But at the same time, you've got to look at it and go, well, if you're in the position at this time of the season, you're relying on other teams, then something has gone wrong along the line.
And getting ready for a push at the playoffs. Corinthians manager Michael Golding looks ahead to a massive week for his club.
If any of the managers were truthful in the playoffs and off the record, maybe they would say that we're the side that they all want to play.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Kent Nolly podcast sponsored by Sandwich Town Youth FC. What a week it's been with staying ups and going downs, mainly top of our agenda this week, but a whole load of off-field shenanigans for us to discuss too. I'm John Phipps, who's really enjoying Jurgen Klopp's farewell tour. And on the line now is a man probably more relieved than most that his team season is over. It's Matt Gerrard. How are you, pal? You've called this week's episode, I Love Rymans. You know it's not called the Rymans anymore. It's the Pitching In Isthmian League. Do you know what pitching in is?
No, I don't. What is it?
It's an initiative to support and develop grassroots sport in the UK, helping non-league clubs improve their facilities.
Very nice of them. I'll look forward to seeing the patch on the Dover Athletic shirt. I take it they've already unscrewed the Vanarama and thrown it in the bin at Cranbrook.
I assume those hoardings have gone and now.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, but we move on. Onwards and upwards to next season. So, yeah. But no, yeah. It is what it is. So, season's over, thank goodness. So, season's nearly over for me as well, which is always pleasing. So a bit of a break now, but hopefully a couple more games next week for me though.
Yeah, and a couple more podcasts to go, and then we'll do the exact opposite of what animals do. We hibernate in the summer, don't we, Matt?
Well, the occasional text to make sure we're still on this planet, and that's about it. Then we'll regroup again in August.
Yeah, sometimes we like to have a phone call sort of mid-June just to make sure we can still chat to each other. So I'm sure we'll line that one up when you get back from Germany.
And I will send you pictures for me from the Euros as well, of course.
Oh, perfect. What a time to be alive. Well, anything to report? I can tell you Peter Kay was very good, very funny.
Despite
we were sat in front of a really annoying woman. And like, you know, I appreciate people want to go and enjoy themselves. It's fine. But if you could enjoy yourself a little bit quieter and so as not to spoil it for everybody around you, that would be nice. Literally.
Was she laughing too hysterically?
No, she was. It wasn't that. I mean, it's a comedy show. You can't have a go at anyone for laughing. I mean, even if they laugh like a hyena, like Melanie off Neighbours, you know, that's not a problem. My problem with this woman was she was trying to finish the jokes before we got to the punchline. And then she kept going, yes, Pete. Yeah, you and me, Pete. Yeah, I agree with you, Pete. Oh, Pete. And then he said something. She went, oh, I can't believe you went there, Pete. It was like she was trying to have a conversation with him like they were best mates. And she was sat in row U, block 110. She was miles away. And yet she still was rattling on. And honestly, at the interval, I just said to Fia, I said, we need to just get out of here for 10 minutes, go and join the toilet queue just to get away from her for a little bit.
Because
no, she was with someone else, and they were happily, well, he was sort of getting involved a little bit, but, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but there were certain bits where he would ask you to shout things out, and despite being as far away as we were, she thought he could hear her, and there were bits where there was a little bit of singing along encouraged, and she would do that at high volume and bad quality. But it didn't take anything away from it, and Matt, I know you're going later in the summer, and all I'm going to say to you is, we'll discuss it when you've seen it, but the finale is unbelievable, is all I'm going to say. I can't say any more than that, but it's a great night out. Very funny. He's lost a lot of weight. He looks quite well, but he's not lost his wit and his humour. And yeah, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
And we brought back some childhood memories, Melanie from Neighbours.
Yeah. She's in it now. She's in the current reboot.
Is she?
She is.
What does she look like these days?
Well, like she did then, but older. Yeah, right, okay. Oh. So this is good fun. Right, so she came back just before the end of before it got canned, right? Can you guess who she's married to when it finished 2 years ago?
Paul Robinson.
Nope, I'm going to give you a clue. You've seen his car.
Seen his car.
Toadie. She was married to Toadie.
Oh, right. Is he still married to Toadie now?
No.
I've met Toadie.
I know that's what I said, but I'm sure in your photo albums that you sent me, you said the car that you took a picture of was Toadie's car.
Oh, probably. Yeah, it could have been. Yeah. Is Toadie still in it?
He is, but he's currently... Look, I don't want to get into Neighbours chat.
You're a big fan of Neighbours, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't want to get into it, but Toadie's currently gone away to America because he's just done the dirty with Melanie, despite being married to Therese. It's all you need to just catch up with it, Matt. It's on Monday to Thursday, Amazon Freebie. I can't get into it too much. It's a football podcast. No one cares about Neighbours apart
from me.
30
minutes, Job.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, it's all good. All good. You been up to anything exciting apart from football?
No, nothing again. It's just. The weather's so rubbish. Normally by now I've put the shorts on, sat in the garden, we've had a barbecue, it flashes up, we've done previous years, but no, working, carrying on me running a bit, so did a 10k on my own on Sunday.
Very good.
But that's then watched the marathon and thought, okay, I'm never gonna do that.
My mate did the marathon in 3 hours 7 minutes.
That's good going.
Unbelievable going. And on Saturday afternoon before Peter K, he was in the pub having a pint with us. And then he goes and does a marathon in three hours and 7 minutes.
Is that his first marathon, or has he done it before?
I think he's done a marathon before, but he trained really hard and literally did 7 minute miles the whole bloody way round. So, and he raised more than £1,000 as well for cardiac risk in the young, which is a charity that I know people in Kent football actually are very fond of as well. So massive well done to my mate Robbo.
It's a lot of work. Again, my sister-in-law is just the training, isn't it? That's a lot of. That's basically you're writing off probably from about December to April, isn't it?
I genuinely don't have enough time to train.
No, we did say this. We discussed this after watching it on the telly on Sunday. Yeah, it's getting the time to do it. And it's not the greatest time of the year as well, is it? So,
especially with my working patterns as well. You know, I can't do a run when I get in from work, can I? Because it's pitch black and who knows who's out on the mean streets of Eastbourne after 12 o'clock.
Right. So, no, but fair play to the people who did it. I know Archie Hatcher. Future superstar for Dover, hopefully he did it. So, and I'm sure
Craig Stone did it as well, didn't he?
Craig Stone, yeah. So, yeah, really good. Fair play to all these people who do that. So, yeah, and apart from that, nothing, mate, really. Nothing, just waiting for the weather to improve. I don't think it's going to be that good this weekend either. So, pleased that, you know, long, hard season ended. And again, a couple of games, I say, probably maybe two games left, hopefully, for me of the season then. So I'm keeping myself up here. Then we can recharge the old batteries.
Absolutely. And you can tell Matt is tired of football and he's tired of the Neighbours chat. Yeah. So we're going to move on. It's our 294th episode this week. And I found a musical duo called 294. His songs sound a little bit like they wouldn't be out of place on the EA Sports FC soundtrack. But with an average of 11 monthly listens, they probably won't be making it on there anytime soon. What did annoy me about them was that all of their song titles didn't have any spaces in them, and they had capital letters at the start of every word, and all without fail ended with exclamation marks. Ugh, grammar is important, kids. I also found Oxneson 294, which is a radioactive isotope of the largest element on the periodic table. It's so radioactive that scientists reported a half-life of 0.69 microseconds. So therefore, they can't tell anything about it because it literally just goes. I don't understand any of this stuff, but this planet we live on is quite the place, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you follow various things, what goes on around the world on social media, these various science things and things like that. It is a crazy world out there, I have to say.
It really is. Let's get on with the show then, and we'll start in the National League, where the football gods opted for the good option on Saturday, as FC United grabbed the point they needed from a goalless draw to secure their safety in the top tier of non-league football for another season, at the expense of Bournemouth, who now get to spread their well-renowned charm across the National League South again. You best start that crowdfunder now, Nigel. I wasn't able to watch the game, but I was getting regular updates, and it seemed there were chances at both ends. But in the end, Fleet did exactly what they needed to do to secure their survival. Job well done for them in the end, Matt.
Yeah. I think it would have been very hard for them to be relegated on 52 points or whatever it is they would have on. So, yeah, a good season. And I think the group in the summer, it'd be interesting to see who the players they've got for next season, how many they keep. Danny Sell may look to bring players in. And I think they'll be looking to maybe have a better season next year. And as I keep saying it, I think next year may be a good season to be. If you can get it right, you can really get in the playoffs. I don't think there's a particularly a big favourite, maybe Southend, but I think there are plenty of places up for grabs. The likes of Forest Green coming down and probably Sutton. I can't believe they're going to be big hitters. So I think and it could be even Maidstone. It could be a good season if you get it right. Hopefully, Epsley have learnt from their mistakes. But Danny Sell's done a good job going. Maybe I think they maybe look to strengthen the squad in certain places. Maybe some of the players that got them there and then from the National South we moved on. And they're from there. So, yeah, job well done. I thought they would have a better season, honestly, Epsley. But looking at all the other promoted sides, they've had a good season, really. I think they finished the top of the promoted sides, haven't they? Yeah, they did indeed.
No, didn't Fylde get above them?
Oh, yeah, just one place. Yeah, I've got York came up. From there, yeah. But yeah, but again, shows what a tough division it is, the big leap from National League South to National League. But I'm sure Epsley will work hard in the summer to make sure they're not in this position again.
I think they'll have learned a lot from this season, won't they? Because obviously it was really difficult for them because they were exceptional last season. And when we had Damien on a few weeks ago, he said, you know, pretty much the performance that they had last season was one of the best that the National League South has ever seen. And for that team, that style to struggle as they did and find the going a little bit tougher, I think that was probably a bit of a shock to them. And it shocked a lot of people. And, you know, you're sitting there saying, oh, that they should be looking at the players. I think actually they could probably just do with setting their stall on being mid-table next season and then really push. But, you know, if they're going to back Danny Searle, then I'm sure he'll get some players in that he knows and he'll build that team up again. And, you know, massive well done to them because it wasn't easy for them going there. And do you know what? I looked at the team, Bournemouth out. They've got some good players in there, Bournemouth. Yeah.
Just got a little bit old together, haven't they?
Yeah, but I don't know how they've got into this state. I mean, my thoughts on Bournemouth are pretty well publicised. I'm not a big fan. But I was really surprised when I saw the quality of the team that they had there, that they found themselves in this position. But Epsley United had a job to do. And Dan was at the game and he was texting me and messaging me. And at one point he said, it looks like they're playing for a draw, which would be a risky game. And, you know, I was worried a little bit. The longer it went on 0-0, you do worry because it only takes a lucky ricochet or something like that to hit against them. But ultimately, they did the job. They set the team up in the right way. And now they can put this season behind them and look to rebuild. And I was already looking to see if the retainers to come out, actually, to see where they decide to go, what angle they're going to take into next season. But it'll just be a matter of just getting in there and doing the absolute best that they can. And as you say, big hitters gone in Chesterfield. Hopefully the Barnet or Bromley will go as well. And whichever one of those two doesn't go up, you would expect to be there or thereabouts. Solihull Moors will probably be up there as well. But the thing is that, as you say, there's no one exceptional big hitter, big spending team. These teams of Barnet, Bromley, Solihull Moors are all very good sides that have done very well consistently over a few years. But they haven't got the backing, the stadium, the resources of Wrexham, Notts County, Chesterfield the last two seasons. So it is going to be a wide open division. And Epsley United have got an opportunity. And, you know, they've done the hard part, which is to stay up in their first season, as you say. Two of the other promoted teams had an absolute Reggie Blinker and have gone straight back down. So they've done a good job in doing things the right way. And they've got a lot to be proud of for how it's gone this season.
Yeah, I think so. They made the right decision, as it turned out, to get rid of Dennis Catree. Danny Searle's come in. It'd be interesting. I'll be interested to see their transfer business in the summer, where they go from there.
Also on Saturday, the top seven was confirmed for all of 24 hours before some good old rootin' tootin' National League farcery kicked in. As Gateshead were denied permission to compete in the playoffs due to not having a 10-year lease on their stadium. That's an EFL rule, one that none of us were aware of until Sunday, I'm sure. Then the National League fun and games began as they first announced that with Gateshead out not being replaced in the playoffs, Solihull Moors would be given a bye to play Barnet. Then the following day, they changed their minds to the right decision and gave fourth place Altrincham that bye to play Bromley on Sunday. Solihull Moors have then played and beaten Halifax tonight. But they rightly have their noses out of joint as they've now just got 2 full days between the Eliminator Clash and their semi-final at the Hive. Now, Matt, if you were planning on hosting a lash up in a brewery, would the National League be the last people that you call to help you organise it?
Yeah, they don't do themselves any favours. I feel for Gateshead. And
yeah, I was going to say, first and foremost, I feel so sorry for Gateshead, who have done everything they can. They've got into the playoffs. They've had a really good season. And then to be told, actually, and I mean, it's a technicality, isn't it? This, and especially the statements coming out from the council saying, well, there is something in place, but there is a break clause in it. And I mean, I guess you also feel sorry for them because I've never been, but all reports are that's a pretty poxy place to watch a game of football. So you would hope that the council, if they're not having screwed them over like this, will be looking saying, right, well, let's actually find you a stadium that is suitable and we'll help you build it.
It just seems bizarre in anything they do, the National League, from that. Again, firstly, the Football League need a 10-year charter or whatever for it to play. Probably not, but again, that's by the by.
We wouldn't need it for Forest Green and Sutton, would they?
So exactly. What about the 3G pitch? Sutton might have. What would have happened if Sutton said, "Oh, we're going up, but we're not digging up our 3G pitch. We'll pretend to, but the first game of the season will be 3G. I'm not going to check them out." That's another story. But surely they must have known this was happening with Gateshead by the end of March, and to do it and balls it up with that statement on Sundays sums it up. Surely they could have pushed Aldershot in. I know this is precedence from there, but just to make an absolute mockery and then to give Solihull a bye and then 2 hours later to take them back out, an absolute farce. So the National League has never been a well-organised outfit. We've seen it with the Truro situation. I feel for Gateshead. If you're a Bromley supporter, what a season you've had. With the second best defence in the league, you'll be hoping, right, goodness sake, get promoted, even though it'll be tough against Altrincham. Let's get out of this league and become a football league club, and then we can impress even more. I think it's going to be another sellout on Sunday. They're in the right position, Bromley. Will it come to it? Probably them and Barnet are the best two sides. They'll fight it out at Wembley in about 10 days' time, hopefully.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I was going to say Bromley did end their regular season with a 2-1 loss at Gateshead, if they were allowed in the stadium, of course. Altrincham, though, just 1 defeat in their last 9 matches. So that's an interesting challenge for Andy Woodman's side at the weekend.
Yeah, Altrincham, a proper non-league club, I would say.
Well, famous in the 80s, weren't they, for being a really strong non-league team.
And I take heart of that they have had double relegations and then come back up again. So from a Dover perspective, but yeah, they've done really well. Shows the strength of the football in the greater Manchester area. Could they get promoted? To me, they'll always be a non-league club. So it's a big opportunity for them. I'm sure Bromley at home with the firepower, they don't lose many games and big crowd behind them. Hopefully they'll have enough to get to another trip for the Wembley for the Bromley supporters.
Yeah, and that would be what, 3 trips to Wembley in 6 years, something like that. Wow. Amazing, absolutely amazing, and you know, massive good luck to Bromley. As you say, it's going to be a tough game against Altrincham, but I'm sure the big crowd we packed into Hayes Lane can help them do the job. And as we say, they will play either Solihull or Barnet. That game is being played on Saturday. The winners of that will play at Wembley Stadium against either Bromley or Altrincham. Let's move down to the National League South, where the playoffs have already started. And Maidstone United, they had to do it the hard way, but they've tonight beaten Averley by 2-1 to move into the semi-finals of the playoffs. They'll be going to Worthing for their semi-final at the weekend. Looked a bit iffy when they went 1-0 down against Averley tonight, Matt, but they've come back, they've got the win. And as we said last week, they'll fancy themselves in a one-off game, won't they?
I was there on Saturday when they beat Hampton by 5-1 and got a couple of really good goals. You just can't, as I said, I think on George Jacoby, the job he's done, the biggest job he's done is to galvanise the club. Absolutely everybody, the support. If they'd have lost tonight, I don't think any Maidstone fan would have been gone out there moaning, because the love the club has got with its supporters and itself, it's just unbelievable. And they can achieve anything here. I was at the gate. They've beaten Worthing 4-0 and lost 5-1 away. So over a 2-legged game, they're absolutely level. So to me, Worthing, I said at the start of the season, if you finish above Worthing, you'll win the league. So, of course, that means Chelmsford and Yeovil came above them. But tough place to go. Worthing would have a lot of the ball. But I just think Maidstone have got something and George Adekobe's got something. And I would give them a chance there if they can keep it tight early doors to win at Worthing and carry on the dream of hopefully joining Ebbsfleet in the National League, which would be an unbelievable season for them. But if it doesn't happen, I think the Maidstone United fans have got their love back for the club, which I know the cup run helps, but George Adekobe's done a magnificent job there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but Worthing is tough. And funny enough, Matt, I was looking earlier on because I was having a conversation with one of our guests about playoff defeats. And I was racking my brain about a Kent team who got a shoeing down on the south coast somewhere. And I don't know if you remember this because it was the year before we started the podcast, I think. Yeah, just over a year before we started the podcast. But Hythe played at Worthing in the playoff semi-finals and lost 7-0.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so... And at the time, people were saying Worthing know how to play that pitch. They are formidable at home, Worthing. Mm. Even though they've lost their manager, that you know they've carried on in a similar vein, and they will be bang up for this at the weekend on Sunday. Make no bones about it. There'll be a big crowd in there that they can be quite boisterous, the Worthing supporters as well. So I'm sure it's going to be a tricky one for Maidstone United. But as we say, they've been to Ipswich and won, so there's absolutely nothing for them to fear, is there?
Absolutely not. If they can play to their ability, and from a Maidstone point of view, you've got Matt Rush, who is a quality player at this level, a real menace. You've got Mo Farl, a good player at this level. Maidstone have got goals in them recently. So Sam Corn, lovely player. So a lot of sides I've seen this season, you look to the side and thought, Maidstone. I look at quality all over the pitch. So it will be a tough ask against Worthing, no doubt about it. But I think Maidstone will, as many as they can take, they'll go there. It's a 3G, so there's no real uncertainty for them on that point of view. But they'll go there, I think, full of confidence. George Adekobe will always, as he does, play it down. Next game, next game, next game. But I think he sees in his squad something that can achieve something this year.
And a good bit of spirit tonight to come from behind and get that. And I suppose going back to Saturday, you had a couple of good goals in there. But did they play well for you? Do they look like a team ready for the National League?
It's difficult on that basis because I think they would have learned from their mistakes next season. If they do go up and win the playoffs, I think they'll be more radical in the change in the squad, I think. I think they'll... Right. Unfortunately, thanks for getting us up, but we're going to move you on because I don't think they want to do the mistakes last time, and I don't think George Adekobe wants that either. So, again, a couple of massive games for Maidstone. Even though you probably think if they don't go up, it's a great season, they can probably think if you get into the National League next season, we will learn from our previous mistakes and we could stay there, be like an Eastleigh or side like that who's been there for a long time.
I know you caught up with Oliver Rush at the weekend as well. Was he in good form?
Yeah. Again, I sent the interview through. I said something wrong with my thing. Yeah, he was scathing about something, John, which I know you're going to be scathing about. He was on good form again, delighted with the season he's had. Again, he knows if they go up, it's a big financial impact, but the club is in such a good position. You want to go up now, I think, because if next season you get knocked out of the FA Cup, you don't go up, knocked out the second qualifying round and you're in eighth position in the league, you might lose a little bit of that, the hunger you've got. So they're in a good position now. Strike when the iron's hot if you want to go up. I think it's a good one for Maidstone if they can do that.
Absolutely. A tough old game for them at the weekend, but good luck to everyone associated with Maidstone United, and who knows what we'll be talking about next week. I did say earlier on that the final for the National League playoffs is on the 11th. That's non-league finals day. It's actually the Sunday next week. Sunday the 5th is the final, possibly involving Bromley. And we will let you know about that next week with the Maidstone potential final the day after. So we shall see how that all plays out. The Stones, as Matt just said, finished the regular season in style with a 5-1 win over Hampton and Richmond. While Dartford secured top spot in the relegation zone as they finished off with a 2-1 win over Truro on the last pitch, their popular groundsman and friend of the show, Jay Burkauer, produced. The AGM Cup may not be on offer, but they are at least in position to take advantage of it if it does.
I'm led to believe, are they going to chuck Truro out because they haven't got a ground?
Well, the thing is, though, Matt, the way that they'll do it as well is they'll probably look at the North teams as well first. And there's a team that's gone down with more points than Dartford in the North League. So they'll probably look at it over the tier rather than over than the South. I mean, let's be honest, Matt, who knows what the National League will do? Yeah. They might just look at it and say, come on, Dover, come on back. Anything could happen with them.
What will happen to Oxford City? Will they come in the National League?
That's a tough one. They may end up in the North. It's obviously Dorking and Bournemouth will both go in the South. So it'll all depend on, you know, I mean, if Truro were then to be removed and a North team were to be reprieved, then Oxford would come back in the South.
Could Bournemouth go in the North? Because it's Bishop Stortford from North of Bournemouth. Probably round that way.
I think Bournemouth is further south. I don't think our teams are going to be spared that the joy of a trip there, unfortunately. But there you go. Tunbridge Angels ended with a 2-2 draw at home to Slough. Welling also drew at St Albans. And true to form, Dover ended with defeat, losing 3-1 at home to the champion Yeovil. Ticket prices for the return to the Isthmian League have been announced today, Matt. And a couple of internet mathematicians were on the case pretty quickly, weren't they?
Yeah, people, again, I think it was £17, £18 to get in a Crabble this year. So they weren't going to go down to £12. I know that. So,
but the thing was, did you know what the boffins have pointed out, Matt? The season ticket price has gone down and they're saying £11 a game, but then there's also two fewer games. So actually it's going to be, rather than, it was actually £10.60 a game this season, it's going to be £11 a game next season. So they've made a big song and dance about reducing the prices, but actually on a match-by-match basis, it's gone up.
But they've got maybe they'll give free tickets for the Isthmian League Cup anyway, if they can do that.
The Velocity Cup away to hashtag, yeah, living the dream, mate.
But, again, to be fair to the club, they've been pretty good on social media, trying to get it. I know Jake the Bell's trying to get people in, signing up for things as well. So, my daughter will get a season ticket for the price on that. So, and I'll do my bit for the club as well. So, again, whatever David do, they're going to get criticised until they start winning football matches.
Away from that, I did see an interview with Jake where he said, you know, he's hoping to keep some of the players who've been at the club over the last couple of years. But obviously, because they've had a lot of exposure at National League South level, they may want to stay and play at that level, despite the fact that in the nicest way possible, they've not particularly excelled at that level. If you can keep half a dozen of the squad you've got now, would that put you in a good grounding for next season?
I think so, yeah. I think some of them will get better offers. Some of the youngsters who think they should get better offers, I don't think they will. But of course, Dover will offer them a contract. So if you do want to get money, they'll have to give Dover some money. It's not going to be hundreds of thousands for these kids, but it might be a couple of grand. Maybe clubs don't want to do it. So, and as I said before, they on their CV, Luke Baptiste, I think he said he's 100 game for the club at the weekend. You can probably count on one hand how many games he's been involved with that actually won in that period. So some of these players who may think they can do better maybe have to have a look at themselves.
Yeah, let's move into the Isthmian Premier Division, Dover's destination for next season, where they won't be playing Margate. Despite winning 2-1 against Wingate and Finchley on Saturday to move level with Chesson on points, the Ambers' game in hand proved vital on Tuesday night as they beat Horsham to move 3 points clear of Gate. But crucially, they've got a 14-goal lead on goal difference. Now, stranger things have happened, but even a club statement said that their relegation is essentially confirmed. So Gate's stay at step three is over. Given the change in the pyramid, it's pretty hard to pinpoint exactly the last time they were at step four. But I'd say the 1950s looks the most likely, the last time they were not in the Southern League or higher. A disappointment then for the fan club.
They won the Isthmian Bees Rovers League Southern year back in the day.
Yeah, but that would be
step three.
Yeah, because the National League South didn't exist then, so that was to get into the conference, wasn't it? So into the Southern League Premier Division, and then the conference. So yeah. it was still step three. So as I say, I couldn't find anything. But as I say, disappointment then for the Thanet club. And after the Chesson win, which effectively sent them down, Matt spoke to Gate player coach Ben Greenhall.
Yeah, it's a massive shame because of the fight that we've put up over the last seven games. We've got 14 points in seven games, and some of them have been sort of like match winners and things like that, and sort of late goals, and there's been a lot of excitement, there's been a lot of buzz, and it looked like the miracle was going to happen. We closed a 10-point gap to nothing. And then obviously it's a massive shame that Horsham didn't go and get a result. But at the same time, you've got to look at it and go, well, if you're in the position at this time of the season, you're relying on other teams, then something has gone wrong along the line.
Again, you haven't been relegated over the last few weeks. As you say, it's the earlier part of the season. You went for, I think, from November, I think you beat Chatham quite heavily in November. Then you didn't go on a winning streak for a while, and they changed the manager. Again, you look back on that now. Did you think the club, you had enough quality in the squad at that time? Is it a confidence thing that the results went against you?
I think what began in that sort of initial poor run of results was a lot of last-minute goals, which was something that probably is difficult to work on, but more probably easier to manage in the actual games themselves, and we didn't manage those situations properly. Whether that was sort of seeing the game out in certain ways, or sort of the way that we were playing for the final 5 to 10 minutes, the way that we were defending for those final 5 to 10 minutes, and I think that sort of had a knock-on effect to dropping us down into relegation positions. And then I think we had a sort of middle part of the season where certain players were changing, players were leaving, certain players were coming in probably without the right sort of quality and not up to the level in it, and it took probably a little bit too long for us to sort of cement what our best 11 was, and for other players to come in and cement their positions rather than having to be changed in and out because of poor performances. And we got to that position, and you could tell by our form over the last seven games we were there. However, it was too late. That's the harsh reality. I think we only worked out what our 11 was, like we said, in probably the 32nd game of the season.
Mark Stimson, very experienced manager, come in. He didn't get the new manager bounce. Do you think he's the man to take Margate back up? Because he has been successful at this as a manager before. It just hasn't really worked out for him at Margate.
Yeah, Simo's had a brilliant career within football as a player and a manager. So those sort of things for me, I don't think I can really comment on that, because I think if I was to comment in any way, shape or form, I don't think I've got the right to say that about a manager who has been so successful, and sort of a player who's played a good career as well. And like I said, I think he's won the trophy numerous amounts of times. So I don't think that luckily those decisions aren't in my hands, because that's not a decision that I would be able to make myself. But one thing that I would personally add is there has been positive signs in the last seven games, and I've been having this conversation with many people. If you look around non-league this season, and even in the Football League, how many manager bounces have actually had a bit of a negative effect at the beginning? I think this season sums up that the transition of manager, how difficult it really is, and that maybe it is difficult to get that initial bounce. Obviously, working with Dartford myself, Dartford had the exact same thing. The manager bounce sort of didn't happen, and results kept going in the same way. So, and even if you look around into a little bit higher leagues, with Wolfstone it happens, Notts County it happens, and it's something that maybe we see in the Prem, where you get the initial manager come in and they do go and get a certain amount of points, and it looks like a brilliant idea, but it's very difficult to have a transition in non-league, especially when you're sort of incorporating a group of players and you have to try and get a group of players in. So regarding Stimo himself, I've had a good record under him myself in terms of scoring goals and sort of continuing the form that I've had at Margate. But like I said, I wouldn't feel appropriate to be able to talk about Stimo's managerial career, because he's had a great one as it is.
You personally, talking about your season, how do you feel your season has gone?
At the end of the day, we've been relegated, so I personally feel like there's a lot of pressure on my back at Margate, and I think that's worked for me over the years. And again, I think the numbers are good again this year, so I can't hide away from that. However, I might be critical of myself and say maybe they're not good enough. Maybe I could have got more. I think I've scored over 50 goals in the last three seasons, sort of borderline 60 goals now. And obviously, my other job is to create goals, and I've had a numerous amount of them as well. However, if I look at it and go, maybe if it had been four or five more goals or created four or five more goals, would we be in a different position? So I look at myself and sort of, I have to analyse that, and that I have to accept that I'm in a team that is getting relegated. And even when we look at sort of Steve Cawley as well, we've, between us, I think we've got something like 36 goals. So it's a good return, but then we have to look at what could we have done more, what else could have happened. And it's definitely a tough one to take.
Margate is a club. How can they bounce back from that? There's plans in to upgrade the ground. Is this one step back to go maybe two steps forward in the future?
Possibly. Only time will tell. I think if you look at Ramsgate at the moment, where obviously there are rivals, but you have to give them credit for what they're doing in that league. Obviously, they've got a good possibility of getting promoted, even if it might be going into the playoffs and having a bit of a lottery over the next couple of weeks. But what they've done, they've got a good sort of amount of fans coming in, and we have to look at it and go, well, let's get Margate back to that, because the reason I came into Margate is because Margate is a big football club, and we can't hide away from that. So we have to accept that maybe if it is going down, maybe can we rebuild in a division where we'd be looking to get towards the top end of it, and then obviously having a bit more of a fight and hopefully bringing, for me, it's bringing that sort of support base back together. And that's one thing that I've definitely struggled with mentally a little bit, is after Jay's year, there was a lot of negativity going about. When obviously we came back to the club for my second year, there's a lot of negativity going about, which was nothing to do with the players. I don't feel the players have ever been on receiving the wrong end of abuse. However, it was, there was a lot of abuse going on within the club, and that was tough to see as players, because you can't hide away from that. And then suddenly players start feeling what's going on at our club. And that was difficult. And I think my personal ambition would be, if I'm at Margate next year, is can we rebuild that fan support and get everyone back together? Because at the end of the day, we all have to have the same objective, and that is for Margate to be a successful football club. I understand that there's frustrations left, right and centre from certain people. However, I know everyone wants the same thing. So if we want the same thing, we need to rally together and actually build the football club back to where it belongs.
Yeah, I think it's a big drop to this level for a first time in a long time. But they've been there before and got back up. So it's just got to say, everybody pushing in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's what it's got to be. I think if the club continues where fans are against certain decisions and fans are amongst each other, not understanding what's going on with the football club, I think if we keep that negativity, then things could spiral even worse. And don't get me wrong, that's not the reason why we've been relegated. We've been relegated mostly because players haven't performed well enough. The team hasn't performed well enough. And I think we potentially it could have been in last year against, and that's what's even more frustrating to take. And like we said before, it's even more frustrating that we've put on those performances, and we are now in that position where we're still getting relegated.
On your other hat on, Dartford again, unfortunately they've suffered relegation, but it could be a chance for some of your academy boys to maybe make a mark next season.
Yeah, that's obviously with my day today, everything's gone absolutely brilliantly. We've managed to produce a lot of good, talented footballers that are ready for non-league already. And obviously we've had a good season winning the academy league ourselves. So we've got a brilliant group of kids. And it's, if I'm being honest, it's never ending at the moment. It's not like we've got one coming through, watch out for this one. It seems to be, we've got a lot coming through, and I feel sorry for the other ones who could probably come through as well. So AD at the moment's been brilliant with the contacts of trying to get these players involved. Ollie's obviously had a great spell with Dartford. He had a loan spell with Margate where he wasn't breaking into the Dartford first team earlier on in the season, and he got a good amount of minutes at Margate, and then as soon as his opportunity arose back at Dartford, he jumped at it, which is brilliant, and credit to him. But like I said, there's plenty of other names. We've actually got 5 dual-edged players at Margate from Dartford at the moment, and probably Jeremiah Pinder's the one who's shouting at the moment. He's got 2 goals and 3 assists in his last 4 games. So he's someone that's obviously going to be on the books as well. It's actually probably going to be difficult for AD because he won't be able to play all the academy boys, but at the moment he's probably looking to play quite a few of them. And every time he talks to me, we're not talking about one player, we're talking about 6-7 players. So it's a great position to be in. sometimes a relegation can be better for the younger players. So maybe for these younger players, they might get more of an opportunity. Obviously, only time will tell with that. But I think they're coming to a good spell where they're all ready to give men's football a go. And one thing that I know will be difficult with my connections is obviously with Dartford and Margate being in this league. So if I am to be at Margate next year, then it's difficult bringing in players from Dartford because technically they're both part of the Eastern League. So that is something to think of. But I'm sure Dartford as a football club will give it a go in the Eastern Prem. And having spoken to AD quite a lot recently, and I know he's got good plans and he's definitely given it good intentions.
Frustrated, disappointed, upset. It's been a hard season for Margate. But to be honest, the last 8.5 years have largely been pretty miserable affairs for the long-suffering fans at Hartsdown Park, haven't they, Matt?
Yeah, it's a real shame because I think, when they got promoted under Laz Litt or, all the money coming in, you thought Margate were going to go in the right direction. Clearly, they haven't. As you mentioned, the 3G went down and they haven't really won many games on that either. So they haven't really sort of approached it. Hopefully, things off the field will get in. But it was interesting what Ben Greenell said there, that opposite of Maidstone, isn't it? Infighting, the link between the supporters and the club is really not there, and they've been relegated. I wouldn't have thought that would be the case. Margate would side that solid in this division, should have enough quality. Hasn't happened to Mark Stimpson. The quote from the club was quite interesting, sort of because Mark Stimpson criticised no training and the club sort of went opposite about that, didn't it? So it'll be interesting to see if Mark Stimpson's still there next season. I know they gave him an 18-month contract, but that statement pointed in the right direction and Ben wasn't too...
Mitchell, was it? He didn't really say anything either way. He said, yeah. As we've said, Mark Stimpson has got history. He's a good manager. He's had success in the past. But unfortunately, this just hasn't worked. And I don't know if there's a break clause in there, but seeing the reaction supporters, even after they've been winning games, has been very against Mark Stimpson. I mean, even on Saturday, when they won on Saturday, supporter put on the groups, well done to the players, Stimpson's still clueless. And it's like, there's obviously no relationship between him and the supporters. And he's had that at other clubs before, and sometimes it's better to just part ways. And as I said before, I like Mark Stimpson. I think he's a good manager, but I just think maybe him and Margate at the moment aren't the right fit. And a big job ahead for Margate, for whoever the manager is, because, with Deal being promoted, that's another team in that area, in that pool of players that they're all competing for. You're going to have Hyde, they're going to be in the market for the same sort of players. Folkestone at a higher level. You've got Faversham may well be coming up to be in that level. You've got Deal. You might have Ramsgate if they don't win the playoffs. The pool of players in that sort of East Kent area is not massive. And there's going to be a lot of suitors for them. And if you're looking at all those clubs, which one is the least appealing at the moment? And I'm really sorry to say that it's Margate, because they've just come down. No one knows what's going on with the stadium and this hotel and everything like that that they're trying to build. They've been talking about for years and years and years. The supporters and the club feel so apart. I just think it's a big job, whoever is in charge next season. I think it's going to be a challenge. And I think one of the first things you've got to do if you were to get that job is start getting the players back to Margate, because for the last God knows how long, the players haven't trained in Margate. The only time they come to Margate is for match days. And I think that causes a problem. They've got the 3G pitch there. One of the reasons to have a 3G pitch is that you can train on it every day. So why not, try and get players who will be prepared to travel down to Margate? And if those aren't the best players, then so be it. But I think the people of Margate would rather have local players giving their all for the shirt rather than players that they feel are just phoning it in and only turn up once a week. It has been... As I say, the last 8 years have been miserable for Margate. And I've always had the mantra, Matt. I've always said on this show, they're the only team in Kent who's put down a 3G pitch and got worse. I've got another one for you as well now that I've come up with. You ready?
Yep.
They signed Joe Taylor and he didn't even score for them. Now, I mean, that's that just speaks volumes, doesn't it? Because Joe has scored goals everywhere he's gone. He got his 50th goal of the season last weekend. And he did, and even he found it a struggle at Margate. And I just feel The club needs something. It needs a reset, and it needs everyone to pull in the right direction. And I understand the fans who I know listen to this show, and I know that what we said last week was flagged up in one of their supporters groups, and people were agreeing with what we're saying. But we all need to pull in the right direction if we want a football club to be successful. And I think Margate need to do that. And I think the supporters need to really get on board, whoever the manager is next season. Hopefully they'll turn up and positive steps will be made at around the stadium. And they'll feel, when they walk in, they'll feel like things are going in the right direction off the pitch. And then things will start to work in the right direction on the pitch as well. And I think that's really important, that, you know, some signs of progress are there over the summer. Because I can guarantee you, if nothing's done in terms of the stadium and they turn up and lose the first two games, it's going to be a miserable old place at the end of August there, isn't it?
I think it's a big summer for Margate. I think they've got to make a decision about Mark Stimpson and where they're going down, as you said, as a club.
And the thing is, there are good managers out there. There are. I was having a conversation with someone the other day about who would go for this job. And there's some good names there that if Margate were prepared to go, there are managers who are experienced at that level and above, who I'm sure would be willing to take on the chance to manage Margate. So if they're going to make a change, I think they need to make it quickly and then decide where they're going to go. But I think even though there are problems there, I still think it's an attractive proposition, because we know if Margate are doing well, they can get a couple of thousand people in there, just like Ramsgate have done. You know, the area of Thanet is a potential to support teams and support them well, as long as they're winning. You know, people with Thanet will go and watch a winning team, be it Margate or Ramsgate, people will go and watch them. And I think that's the most important thing. So if they can just get winning, then the potential at Margate is massive. They've been in the National League, or the equivalent of it, before. They've been to the FA Cup first round and played televised games. You know, there's potential at the club, but it's just got to be untapped the right way.
Yeah, and maybe if they know they're not going to win the game, but you see development off the pitch, so it's a welcoming place to go, because it's a bit of a soulless place at the moment where it is. I think they would be pushing in the right direction. So the statement was pretty much out after the final whistle, wasn't it, last night? So maybe, I don't know if they could have rested on their laurels a bit and maybe thought about it, but yeah. That statement points to me that there will be a change in the summer.
The other thing about Margate, of course, Matt, is there wouldn't be a podcast if it wasn't for Margate Football Club, would there? Because that's where we first met.
Yeah. How many years ago was that? In my pink shorts. So
the first day of the season after they got promoted. So it must have been 2015. So nearly nine years ago.
The glory days of the National South. But that's a long way off for a few of our teams now.
It really, really is. It does seem like a long time ago that we were in that place. Chatham missed a chance to secure second spot when they lost 3-1 to Horsham, while Cray Wanderers said farewell to Hayes Lane in disappointed fashion as they lost 5-1 to Bognor Regis. And Folkestone came from 3-0 down to earn a 3-3 draw with Dulwich Hamlet. Chatham head to third place Enfield on Saturday, knowing a point will get that crucial second spot in the playoffs, while Margate finish at Billericay. Folkestone head to Bognor Regis and Cray Wanderers end their campaign at Dulwich. The Chats will then play their playoff semi-final on Wednesday night. They will be at home. Opponents are yet to be confirmed. It will be Tuesday night, though, for the Isthmian League South East playoffs. And it looks as though it will be Ramsgate, who joined Sittingbourne, Three Bridges and Chichester in them after Cray Valley moved to the brink of the title on Tuesday night. Both of the top two had won 4-2 on Saturday, the Millers at home to Herne Bay and the Rams at Chichester. But the game in hand proved crucial for Steve McKim's side, as they won 4-0 at Hythe on Tuesday night, to be 3 points and 3 goals clear with the game to go. A point at Horndean on Saturday will be enough for Cray Valley to reach Isthmian Premier, and it could leave Ramsgate on 92 points, but in second place. They finish home to Three Bridges, who they could then face again on Tuesday night. That will all be confirmed on Saturday. Whoever it is who doesn't win this title, Matt, is going to have to dust themselves down pretty sharpish, aren't they?
Yeah. In the law of averages, Cray, that win against Hythe. I know Hythe have got a few issues. Only had one sub yesterday. Cray, basically, Ramsgate are hoping that Cray are going to lose. And Cray have lost once all season. So even the most diehard and most positive Ramsgate supporter must really think that it's going to go. We're going to the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see what sort of side Ben Smith puts out the weekend. Will he rest a few players? I think I'll be very shocked if if Cray Valley don't pick up the point they need. Is it Horndean you say they're playing?
Yeah, Horndean away. And apparently he's being played back at Horndean.
They're not playing it, are they? We don't know yet.
No, it's back at Horndean, apparently. So.
Right, okay. So the worries that Ben Smith had about that. Yeah. Again, stranger things have happened. But after 38 and the 38th game, they've only lost once all season, Cray. You would imagine that, again, with Steve McKim, who got a lot of time for on his pod, he will be making sure that they pick up that one point that they need. And you've got to feel for Ramsgate, and they've got to lift themselves if they do get to 92 points. But again, he might not rest players because you want to go in the playoffs with a bit of positivity and momentum as well. So well,
especially if you're going to be playing, there's a potential of playing the same team Saturday and Tuesday. You want to win. Yeah. You want to set down a marker, don't you? And you know what we mustn't forget is while Ramsgate had playoff disappointment last year, 2 years ago, Ben Smith very much did not, as he took his Herne Bay side all the way through and they won the final against Ashford when they were massive underdogs to win that final as well. So you know. It's easy to look at it and say, well, Ramsgate have fluffed the playoffs before, but Ben Smith hasn't. And I think, you know, we saw again, as we said with Maidstone, you know, their FA Cup run has shown that actually they are in a good, that they can beat teams in a one-off game. You know, they can raise their game when they need to. And basically, Cray Valley have got to get 1 point. Ramsgate have got to win two games of football and both of them promoted. That's the simple way of looking at it. And I know it's easier said than done. We're not just here and say just win two games of football. But I think Ben Smith will know how to set that team up in the playoffs. And I think that's going to be a massive thing going forward.
Yeah. Again, I look forward. Again, I'm preempting myself here. I look forward to seeing them on Tuesday night. And there'll be a big crowd. We'll be a little bit of nerves on that playoff, wherever they're playing. But I think they want to... Ramsgate should go up from this position, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, a Sittingbourne, obviously a side to be wary of as well. They will be at home in their semi-final Tuesday night as well. And we shall see how that plays out. But yeah, it's going to be amazing. And it is funny this time of year because, you know, we're sat here talking about the playoffs. And this time next week, it's going to be all over for two of those teams that have worked so hard to get in the playoffs. It literally, the season finishes on a Saturday, and the blink of an eye on a Tuesday, it's all done. So it is really amazing, but that is the way of the world. Also confirmed on Tuesday night was Beckenham's relegation. The Becks have won three of their last four. They beat Horndean 3-1 on Saturday, but East Grinstead won their game in hand 4-0 against Merstham on Tuesday night to send Darren Anzo's side down. Matt, when I saw them a few weeks ago, they looked like they had a bit of fight about them, and the results have kind of back that up as well, but I think ultimately there was just too much to recoup, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think the poor start to the season, and those when we had the manager on conceding late goals is going to, you know, when you're looking at that, you can see where it's gone wrong, but they'll be disappointed. It'll be interesting what league they go in again, but yeah, for Beckenham and Erith, of course, Erith came up. Seasons, hopefully you've learned stuff from that you can maybe move on and again, one step, you know, two steps back to go one step forward, or one step forward to go two steps back, whatever it is. But yeah, I feel for Beckenham because when I went there last season, when they had that great cup run, they were a club on the high with a good support, but just hasn't worked out this season for them. So again, we'll still follow them even if they're not in the scaffold next year.
Yeah, we did that last time, didn't we? It was a bloody challenge sometimes with them being, and it was one of those where, you know, it was almost out of sight, out of mind sometimes in terms of that one. But yeah, very, very strange to be in that situation. But Beckenham will wait and see where they're going to go. I've seen mixed reports of where they're headed. I've even seen on the latest projections, Matt, that Guernsey might be back in the Ishmael League South East. So who knows where that could pan out for our teams with that lovely away day that I don't think any of them actually enjoy, do they? yeah, we shall see what plays out in that division.
You might enjoy a trip on the plane, though.
Oh, he'd love a trip on a plane, surely. He'll be all over that. That would be the highlight of his life. But no, I don't think that's the one for for anybody particularly, is it? But we shall see how it all plays out in the coming months when the FA announce who will be playing where. Saturday's other results saw Hythe beaten 2-0 at Broadwich Heath. Ashford lost out 4-2 at Lancing. Sittingbourne As we said, finished third, have a home playoff on Tuesday, won 2-1 at Phoenix Sports. Sheffield United beat Erith and Belvedere 3-0 in front of a bumper crowd at Home Park, while Sevenoaks lost 2-1 at Three Bridges. Season ends on Saturday with Ashford hosting Broadwich Heath, Beckenham at Burgess Hill, Sheffield United travel to East Grinstead, Erith and Belvedere at home to Merstham, Herne Bay host playoff-bound Chichester, Hythe host Lancing, Sevenoaks are at home to Phoenix Sports, and Sittingbourne host Littlehampton, with, as we've already mentioned, the top two, Cray Valley, head to Horndean, needing a point to win the league. Ramsgate at home to Three Bridges. And then to the scaffold, where the champions were already known, and we now also know the four sides in the playoffs, albeit with the order still to be confirmed. As it stands right now, it would be Faversham against Erith Town and Glebe against Corinthian in the semi-finals on Tuesday night next week for the right to play in the final on Bank Holiday Monday. But all could change over the weekend. Corinthian finished their season at Whitstable, hoping to grab a win that could still get them a home tie. And their boss Michael Golding insists they are the underdogs going into the playoffs. I started my chat with him by discussing the win over Champions Deal that secured their top five berth.
Yeah, it was a strange day. I thought we were good. You could tell that they'd already won the league. You could tell that they're very physically tired. And as I've said to Steve, right, I had a good chat with Steve before and like before the game and on the phone. Like, it must be incredibly hard for Steve as a manager, for his management team and their group of players to carry on, having known for a couple of weeks that they've won the league and having known probably, like you said on the pod last week, since Christmas, that it was just a case of doing their job and just ticking off the games and chalking up the wins. It's no real surprise to me that there has been a drop-off. But fair play to my boys. We were good on the day. We bounced back from a poor performance at VCD the previous week. So it was important to firstly secure our place in the playoffs, because I think myself included had assumed it was going to be a thing. And then BSC were obviously on their good run and were closing the gap. So to finalise that was good. But yeah, three goals at home, a couple of good goals, a clean sheet. It was a good day all in.
You've had a couple of poor performances in the last few weeks. How much of an impact does that have on what's going to happen in the next 7 days?
It's tough to say, really. We've probably had sketchy form for the last 6 weeks or so. We really have. Is some performances, like you say, some have been good, some have been bad. We went to Faversham and got rolled 4-0, and rightly so. We were terrible on the day. And again, Faversham were good. Take nothing away from Faversham, but we were desperately poor on the day. We've had some good results. We went to VCD, and okay, circumstances were strange. There was an hour long delay and injuries and all those kind of things. But we were poor and we didn't have enough quality. So all we're hoping is that last week against Deal, that's hopefully given the boys some confidence. We trained last night and the spirits were high. And I think I'm never going to complain about games, and everyone likes playing football. But I think where we've played Saturday, Tuesday so regularly since the beginning of March, it doesn't overly surprise me that we've failed to maintain our high standards of performance. I think we're a team that are better when we're on the training pitch Tuesday, Thursday, and we can fine-tune things. And I think some of our basics, where we've got a relatively young squad, some of our basics go out the window when we're just rolling out game after game, and there's not much you can do on a Thursday in training. You're looking more at recovery rather than anything tactical or technical. So the performances have been frustrating over the last 6 weeks. We've probably had second or third place in our hands, and then now it's gone because of our own doing. But in terms of over the next 7 days, if we can go down to Whitstable on Saturday and pick up another good performance and hopefully get some points down there, then we'll go into next Tuesday with some confidence.
Is it hard for you? Because obviously you've probably got the most inexperienced and probably the smallest squad of any of the teams that are in these playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if any of the managers were truthful in the playoffs and off the record, maybe they would say that we're the side that they all want to play. All the others have got big name players, and they've got players that have done it at higher levels, and we're a group of players that have come together, and we hit a bit of form in the middle of the season, and we've learned how to win games of football. And obviously myself and the management team have been at this level before, and we know how to win games of football at this level. But yeah, I think in terms of the nitty gritty, I think when you're playing football in September, October, November, and there's no pressure and no one's really looking at the league table, you're just going out and playing games of football, and win, lose or draw, it doesn't ultimately have that much of an impact other than the immediate aftermath. Whereas you get down to the beginning of March and all of a sudden teams are starting to talk about the playoffs, are starting to look at the league table, and those 3 points just feel like they make such a big difference at that stage of the season, that maybe that's come into the young players' minds slightly, or we've started to look further ahead and we got a bit ahead of ourselves and we started to worry about the playoffs or started to think about the playoffs. So yeah, I think in terms of the squad, listen, they've been absolutely fantastic. As I've said all along, like, we had no idea what we were going to be this year. So full credit to the boys for what they've first of all, done getting to a cup final and then securing his playoff place. Like, absolutely full credit to them. But yeah, sometimes you wonder whether it is that little bit of naivety or inexperience that has cost us in games. But that's how we do it. And we've bloodied 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. And I know teams talk about having kids involved and tweet about it. But we provide a genuine pathway. We've started 16 and 17-year-olds for the last 3-4 weeks in big, big games. And they've not let themselves or us down.
How do you approach the game at Whitstable on Saturday? Obviously, you're going to know if Erith Town have gone above you on Thursday night. And then I suppose you'd rather play Glebe than Faversham if you've got a choice. And you could still nick third spot.
I think what people will be doing all day on Saturday is checking their phones and trying to work out all the permutations. And I think everyone will be looking at each other's results, because realistically, all four teams could end up at any of the four positions at any point in the afternoon. So, first and foremost, we're probably not good enough to rotate players and rest players. And like you say, we haven't got a big enough squad. We want to be playing games of football. We want to be having that consistency and that level of play. So we'll be going down to Whitstable and going out to win the game first and foremost. It's a game of football, and I enjoy winning games of football. So we will go and do that. They've obviously had an upturn in form under the new manager, and they'll be looking to finish their season at home in front of I'd imagine a decent crowd with a good performance. So it should make for a good game. But we're certainly not going there and thinking about rotating and resting players ahead of Tuesday, because, like I say, I just don't think we're good enough. I think we've just got to go there and put it all on the line. And like I say, if things transpire in other games and we can come away with a victory, then we might still secure a home playoff, which I think for us is so vitally important.
How do you approach Tuesday night's game when at the moment, you've got no idea who you're going to be playing?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think as well, maybe the beauty of having a team that are relatively young is that we are just going to approach it. And there, of course, will be nerves. I'm not naive to think that there won't be. But I think hopefully we can just approach Tuesday night as a game of football. We'll come up with a game plan at 5:45 or whatever time the game, 5 o'clock, once the game finishes on Saturday. We'll come up with a game plan. We'll work out what we've got to do in terms of whether we're travelling, whether we're at home, and then we'll look at who we're playing, and then we'll work out who's fit from there, and we'll go. But yeah, we got beat up and down at Faversham quite badly, so I'm sure they're looking and they want to play us. We've lost the cup final to Erith Town in the last few weeks. Glebe have beaten us twice this season, home and away. So like I say, I'm sure all the teams are looking, saying we want Corinthian, but we will back ourselves as we have done throughout the season, and if we can perform to our level and if we can get close to somewhere near our best, then we're good enough to give everyone a game.
These playoffs are a great addition to the league, aren't they?
I think they're brilliant, and I've been quite scathing and I've been quite critical of the standard, but the playoffs have been great, and it's probably proved to be harder at the top end in terms of, historically, as we all know, teams will get to Christmas and they'll cut budgets or they'll lose interest and they'll start playing kids because players will leave because there's no opportunity of progression or promotion. Whereas what you've seen this year is you've seen teams going all the way up till the middle of March, beginning of April, still fighting for a playoff place. And you look at the teams from 6 down to 10 that are going to miss out on either the money that they've spent on players or the infrastructure that's there to go up to step 4 or the combining the two of them. And there's some huge clubs there that have massively, massively underachieved over the course of a season. So I think in terms of an addition, it's been crying out of it for years, but to add the playoffs, I think it's been really, really good for the top end.
And we've seen before, obviously, teams that go up from the scaffold 10 to in their first season do pretty well. I know you've said to me that a few times that the standard this season isn't necessarily what it is, but do you still think that teams can go on and make an impression next year?
Steve, King, you'll hate this. Deal will be in the playoffs in step 4 next year. Absolutely, they will. And then I'd imagine whoever goes up out of the other four sides will be a top half side. And obviously, with the difficulty is you can turn around and look at the sides now and say, where would a Corinthian, where would an Erith Town, where would a Glebe or Faversham be? And the difficulty is when you then look at what the team is in July and August, they obviously the investment that teams will put in and whether they keep the same squads, that's always the thing that's difficult to change. But I would look at any of those four sides, or the three other sides, not including ourselves, and say that any of those sides would be a top 10 side in step 4. So, yes, I don't think the standard across the board is fantastic, but I think the investment and the top end is certainly worthy of challenging at the higher echelons of step 4.
And just finally, obviously, we've seen this week the end of FA Cup replays. What are your thoughts on it as a Step 5 manager?
doesn't massively affect us. I've had a terrible record in the FA Cup in my 9-10 years as manager at Corinthian. It's been one of the records that I've been desperate to break over the last few years as you've gone up through the leagues and you've broken FA VAR's longest run and you've broken attendance records and you've broken most wins and points records, and the FA Cup one is the one that's just eluded us. So that's been a frustration on a personal level. I think it's really sad. I think it's good. I know it's difficult when you think of maybe it's one team that out of the course of a season that might get a payday, or one lower league team that might get lucky and draw a Manchester United at home. I'm talking like League One, League Two sides. But I think when you look at what Cray Valley and what Steve have done there this year, going to Cheltenham and drawing and then bringing them back to their ground, that for me is what it's all about. And unfortunately, it seems to be the top teams that get to dictate these things, and we're massively small fish in this. Like I say, it doesn't overly affect us, but I just think in terms of the bigger picture of things, when you see teams jetting off to wherever they go 2 days, 3 days after the end of the season, and they're worried about FA Cup replays, it's a bit of a disappointment.
I will discuss the replay issue shortly, Matt, but these playoffs are shaping up to be really exciting over the next 12 days or so, aren't they?
Yeah, it's again, we said at the start of the season how much it would bring to this division. And now it's going to be taken into consideration over the next few weeks. Who can do it? Looking at it, Michael didn't sound that confident. I think he'd like a home tie if they can get on the end of it. See how it goes from there. You've got to fancy Faversham because they're the side in form, aren't they, in this division? Tommy Warlow, very experienced manager, and Faversham, at the start of the season, they want to get promoted, they could do it. But again, Glebe also had a good season as well. But yeah, he didn't seem that confident, Michael, but I think he's had an enjoyable season, though, because after last year, they needed a pep up. And I think whatever happens, if they get promoted, of course, he'll take it. If it doesn't, I think he'll look back on this season with a great deal of pride.
Absolutely. And I did say to him a few weeks ago when I spoke to him after the cup tie, you know, if he were to get this side promoted, would it be his biggest achievement, bigger than when they got promoted before? And he said 100%, because as he said there, he didn't know what was going to happen at the start of the season. He had no idea how his squad was going to shape up or anything like that. But he has done a great job, you know, and you can't take anything away from Corinthians and their achievement this season, because I think at the start of the season, not many people would have said they'll be in the top five because they were such an unknown quantity. But he's built a squad together, and they are going to have blips, you know, as I said to him there, because they've got the smaller squad. It's much harder for them because they just have to keep on going. And I thought it was a really interesting point we said there. You know, we are better when we're on the training ground, whereas other managers have said before, oh yeah, you know, it's just no, players would rather be playing and they'll just carry on and get the momentum. But actually, I think because there's so many inexperienced players in that team, he likes having them on the training ground to really help them along their way.
Yeah, I think maybe with a young side, he can get his views over to the players. So, again, a big week for him, as he said. He had training yesterday and he'll have training tomorrow to see how they can get it. When you get to this one, I presume a home tie is all the side you want. Very, very tight. I think the league will be absolutely delighted that even on the final week of the season, you don't know the positioning for the playoffs. So, from there, again, that's Tuesday, then it's Bank Holiday Monday and it's all sorted. So, again, some big crowds, I'm sure, will happen in these games as well. So, for me, probably it's going to stay as it is, John. First, second v. fifth, third v. fourth. So, I think, again, I can't see beyond Faversham at the moment, but strange things have happened.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one, and obviously we'll see what happens. Obviously, if the Town play on Thursday, they don't play on Saturday, so they've got an opportunity to put a marker down and put the pressure on Corinthian. And as Michael said there, you know, he's got the feel on Saturday, everyone's going to be walking around just listening to their phones because you want to get, you know, to make sure where you're going to be playing because no one knows. And he said, you know, come 5 o'clock on Saturday, then we'll start thinking about the playoffs. And it's a difficult game to go into on Saturday because you don't want to get any injuries. You don't want to, but you also don't want to lose the game because you want to have some confidence to take into the game on Tuesday. So, you know, it's a difficult one. But yeah, it's, you know, the four really good teams, four teams who've done well this season. I'd say three of those teams have done really well. One of them will be disappointed to be in the playoffs, but they're all good sides. And I think it's set up for nice, impressive games. I think you're probably right. I think Faversham will probably fancy their chances. You know, they'll get a big crowd in if they manage to be at home in both those games. There'll be people in there cheering them on. And from what I understand, reports are that they're a lot more solid under Tommy Warlow, and they've changed the way that they play, and they're a lot more of a threat than they were previously. So I think it's hard to look past Faversham, but that's the magic of the playoffs, because you just never know.
Yeah, again, if I am at Ramsgate on Tuesday, I'll keep one eye on the scores in the other games as well. So even if I don't go to Ramsgate, I could go to Faversham if they're in the second as well. So I'll definitely be at a game on Tuesday.
Absolutely. At the other end of the table, Wellington were relegated on Tuesday night after defeat at home to Kennington, with rumours swirling that their potential move to play at K-Sports has fallen through. A pretty worrying time for the Boots. They've done so well in the past few years, but it just seems at the moment there's maybe some problems going on there, which we're not aware of. But it's been a disappointing season after so many highs. And as Kevin Oakes said the other week, we've had more promotions than seasons. Maybe it's time to regroup and see where they go from here. Elsewhere this week, as well as that 3-0 win for Corinthian over Deal, Ealing Town beat Lordswood 2-1. Faversham saw off Wellington Town 4-1. It was 2-2 between Hons and Blair and Tunbridge Wells. Whitstable won 4-0 at Holmesdale. Kennington beat Punjab 2-1. Glebe 4-0 winners at Lyd. Rustall beat Beersted 2-0. Stanswell beat Sutton Athletic by a goal to nil. VC Athletic won 2-1 at Snodland. Those games were on Saturday. On Monday, ended 1-1 between Tunbridge Wells and Beersted. Deal beat Erith Town 2-0 on Tuesday night. Courtney Barrington scored a hat-trick as Punjab won 4-1 at Lordswood. As we've already mentioned, Kennington 3-1 winners at Wellington to secure their safety. And then also tonight, there has been one game as well, Wednesday night, and it finished Tunbridge Wells 1, Holmesdale 0, meaning that they've almost got through their slog, Matt, and they're finishing the season quite well, having beaten Deal and picked up some other decent results along the way. So well done to Tunbridge Wells. As we say, Ealing Town play their final game before the playoffs on Thursday night as they host Snodland. And on Saturday, final day of the season, Beersted against Fisher, Deal Town against Stansfield, Glebe against Rustall, Lordswood against Holmesdale, Punjab against Faversham, Sutton Athletic against Hollands and Blair, Tunbridge Wells against Kennington, VCD Athletic against Lyd Town, Wellington against Snodland and Whitstable against Corinthian. In the first division, AFC Whiteleaf were confirmed as champions after being awarded the 3 points for their game at Bryden Ropes last month. Well, the playoffs there will be between Larkfield and New Hythe, Rochester United, Staples Monarchs and Lewisham Borough. The first three of those were all level on 59 points before tonight's Larkfield game. So home advantage very much up for grabs there, where Larkfield did come back from 1-0 down to win 2-1 at Croydon and move themselves 3 points clear of the rest. There's still much to play for on Saturday. Last weekend, Bryden Ropes won 2-1 at Croydon. AFC Whiteleaf won 1-0 at FC Elmstead. It was 1-1 between Forest Hill Park and Tooting Beck. SC Thamesley won 4-1 at Greenways. Larkfield and Hythe beat Canterbury 3-0. Meridian VP 4-2 winners over Faversham Strike Force. Fjord Rogers hit a hat-trick as Rochester beat K-Sports 6-1. Staples Monsters out 2-1 to Lewisham Borough. And as just mentioned, on Wednesday night, it was Croydon 1, Larkfield 2. On Saturday, final day of the season in the 16-team Scaffold First Division, the champions AFC Whiteleaf host bottom of the table Greenways. I think it's free entry, that one, if you're in that area. It's Bryden Ropes against Forest Hill Park, Canterbury City against Croydon, Faversham Strike Force against FC Armstead, K-Sports against Staples Monarchs, Lewisham Borough against Larkfield and New Hythe, SC Thamesmead against Rochester United, Tooting Beck against Meridian VP before those playoffs, as I say, are next week. And I think the final is on Saturday, the 4th of May. AFC Whiteleaf, Matt, they've won that league. I've got the feeling they're not going to be in the Scaffold Prem next season.
Oh, where are they going to move to?
I expect they'll be in the combined counties.
Combined counties, right, okay. But the rest of the other sides.
But it all depends on what they decide to do, doesn't it?
Surely, it makes sense. If they've come from the Scaffold, they keep them in the Scaffold. But, well, strange though.
It's all moving all over the place everywhere. So it's...
again, from a perspective of Larkfield and New Hythe, did they lose in the playoffs last year? They did come close last year, didn't they? So I think hopefully Larkfield and New Hythe can be the side that gets promoted. I've got no irons in any of their fire, but as we're disappointed that Whiteleaf actually won the league, hopefully, we'll get guaranteed a Kent side up, but hopefully Larkfield.
Well, no, Lewisham Borough can sneak in. Lewisham Borough has
We definitely...
Larkfield and New Hythe have done well. I think it was a couple of years ago They got to the final and then lost out in the playoff final. And you know, and I think, but yeah, that they've I think they've got different management in and stuff as well now. So it looks like
they're knocking on the door, haven't they? So.
Absolutely, and you know, a great rise for them because they only came into the scaffold just after the pandemic. So to get up there is a good achievement for them. Right, that is all of the leagues dealt with. So now let's talk about the Cup, the FA Cup, the most famous cup competition in the world, known for its tradition, its magic, so many giant killings and upsets. And now they're ditching replays in all rounds from the first round proper, all on the whim of 20 Premier League clubs who've decided to try and bribe the rest of the pyramid with a pitiful sum of money after telling them exactly what will be happening to the Cup. It's been met with widespread condemnation from EFL and non-league clubs, but not the National League, who continue to be in their own world, reportedly telling members that they agree with the decision. But let me tell you all now, it's not the right decision. How can teams who spend their pre-seasons and even in some cases post-season swanning off around the world have the right to dismantle the greatest cup competition in the world? I am sick and tired of managers of players earning upwards of £500,000 a year to be a footballer, moaning that their players are tired. It's their job. Our non-league players, some of whom don't earn a penny for playing the sport they love. They do full-time jobs. They use their annual leave to play games. They travel after work. They end the season with a massive fixture backlog. Some of have played 5 games the last 9 days. Man City have played 6 this month, and poor old pampered Pep is ranting about his side playing too much. What a load of waffle. Replay should be reinstated all the way up to the quarterfinals. And if they want to ditch them anywhere, they should ditch them for the earlier rounds to help our non-league teams avoid fixture pile-ups later in the season. If the dates are the same as this season, some of our clubs could already be playing their 3rd FA Cup tie of the season before Kevin De Bruyne or Martin Odegaard or Trent Alexander have even kicked a competitive ball next season. Yeah, it's those multi-millionaires you need a rest, is it? Get the bleep machine ready, future me, because that, frankly, is a load of f***ing Matt.
I can't understand the decision. First of all, I don't agree with the decision, but why have they not done, if they're going to do this, why are they having replays in from the extra preliminary round? Again, it doesn't make any sense to me on that basis. If Dover got drawn away to Merthyr in the 3rd qualifying round and got a replay, Merthyr don't want to come to Dover, and vice versa, don't they, on a Tuesday? So that doesn't make sense. But whoever made this decision, well, we all know the Premier League clubs make the decision. Money talks. And if the National League said, we do agree with this, that is another reason why they shouldn't be running it. And I'm sure the CEO could be looking at changing his job or being forced to change his job. Nothing surprises me in football, John, these days. It's a money driven pit from the top, and again, people are saying, "Oh, it's only once in a blue moon that you get a replay and play Manchester United away after drawing at home." Yeah, but there is that chance. You look at Cray Valley, what a season they've had. But people will remember them drawing at Charlton, and then having a game at home. I know it's the opposite way round, but the money they made from that as well. From the live TV game and the extra exposure on the BBC they got from that, has put them on the footballing map. So the way it came out, it's shocking, absolutely shocking. And again, unfortunately, John, there will be a team next season that this happens to, that they're going to miss out on that, and then everybody will kick off a fuss but do nothing about it. So, yeah, I'm absolutely really disappointed with it. Again, I presume... Now the Premier League's back up and running and things like that, it'll soon be dredged under the carpet. All these clubs do the statement, but I can't see it being reversed because that's how it is. Probably been signed up for. They were delighted to tell us that one of the rounds goes from a Friday to a Wednesday, didn't it? So
it's insane. Like, you know, I genuinely do feel that if they want to ditch some replays, actually the problem is in the early rounds, you know, yeah. Because Truro have had this massive fixture congestion, which is down to other factors as well, I grant you. But if more games were played midweeks in August and September, we wouldn't be having as many problems as we have. But the problem is we have to leave all these free midweeks after the FA Cup weekends so that we, in case there's a replay. I personally think that to the 4th qualifying round, I don't think there should be replays. Like you say, Dover against Merthyr. No one wants to play that at either venue on a Tuesday night. You know, and also, you might get 2 teams from the scaffold playing each other in the first round. So you might, in the extra preliminary round, you might get, let's just pick two out of the hat. Holmesdale against Fisher. They don't want to play each other Saturday, Tuesday, and then possibly play each other in the league the next week, do they? It would make more... I mean, we had it with Deal and Lid, didn't we? They played on the Saturday in the FA Cup. They were supposed to be playing in the Monday the following week in the league, and then because the FA Cup tie got abandoned and everything like that. But it's just... It's absolutely crackers. And, you know, the teams who actually are suffering with fixture congestion aren't Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Aston Villa, Tottenham, Newcastle, etc., etc., etc. It's our teams that are struggling. Our players who have full-time jobs are running on empty. You know, and I don't know where this has come from, that all these poor, pampered footballers are so hard done by these days. You know, I appreciate this. The game is probably faster. Maybe they have to be fitter. But are they overtraining? You know, should they have a day off training a week to make sure that they're tip-top for the weekends rather than sitting there moaning? I mean, Pep Guardiola sitting there saying, well, we had to play Wednesday and Saturday. Oh, my God, Pep, let me get your violin. Churro played Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday the other week, you pillock.
One thing they haven't said on this, are they giving extra money? Are they doubling the rounds, the money, particularly in the first, second and first round? It's 60 grand, is it? Whatever, no, not even that high, I think. 25 grand if you win the first round. Are they saying that that's now 80 grand? Are they saying that? They're not doing that, are they?
No.
Just to give a bit of money back for these teams.
And that's the other thing as well. The prize money for the early rounds is nothing.
No. Double that.
Exactly. And it's, you know, that's the problem. And the Premier League clubs, the ones who are going to win the competition, I don't care about 2 million quid. Reading about season ticket prices going up in the Premier League, and Liverpool are going to make £1 million from putting all their season ticket prices up. £1 million, that doesn't even probably cover half their wage bill a week. You know, it just feels like these clubs are just so greedy and they're so disconnected from everything else. It's just madness, absolute madness.
I think, unfortunately, it was a big thing last week. Nothing's going to happen again. Yeah, I think it's been under the carpet now. And until there is a poor, unfortunate side that maybe do have a chance of a replay at one of the big boys, if they do it and they miss out, then it will come to the fore. But I would have thought it's all forgotten about now. And because the Premier League's back on with the mainstream media and things like that do it. I appreciate those clubs looking at it. I can't believe it's going to change now, John, because football doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. And it's such a shame because, you know, the FA Cup is the lifeblood. The FA Cup is what got so many of us into football. And now look at it, you know, and it's being reduced to an absolute shell by these selfish clubs who, you know, I don't understand what they're going to gain from it. Because do you know what? The FA Cup was here long before these people and it'll be there long afterwards. So they really need to just sort of get a grip, don't they?
Unfortunately, Premier League is the greed league, John, and it will continue to be the greed league. But again, mainstream media absolutely love it, so don't they? So they some of the mainstream media have criticised this decision, but now the Premier League's back on, they're just bigging it all up, and it will soon be forgotten. It's been forgotten about, hasn't it? They shouldn't have done it before the FA Cup semi final, should they?
No.
Well, the timing of it was pretty poor as well.
It's absolutely shocking, and I feel really sorry for, you know, as we say, Cray Valley when they got that wonderful replay, and they would be robbed of that opportunity. And the other one thing as well that I read that really got my goat was when they said, yeah, but we're going to have more games on TV in the first round, so that'll give more teams the chance to get the broadcast money and get a share of that. If I remember rightly, normally what happens in the FA Cup first round is one of the broadcasters just picks the biggest team, no matter who they're playing. If I remember, what was it, 2 years ago, ITV picked Sheffield Wednesday against Plymouth. That's not going to help any of our non-league teams, is it? You know, there needs to be a shake-up of it all. Football has changed, football has evolved, but not the way that the Premier League clubs think it has. And actually, they need to make a big change to a lot of things about the FA Cup.
Yeah, fully on board, but I just can't see it being changing now, which is unfortunate.
No, you got anything else interesting going on, Matt?
Not really at all, mate. No, I don't know what's going on. Busy at work, etc. Nothing exciting at the moment. So I'm just going to enjoy my Saturday not being at football, which is probably the first time in a long while. But I think it's supposed to chuck it down with rain. So, nothing nothing exciting, mate. My excitement starts in the beginning of May when I've got various events going on. So that's the main thing.
I'll get you, Mr. Rothschild. You've got all the exciting things, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm a busy May and June and July, so with various events going on. So, yeah, nothing's exciting to happen at the moment, but just looking back to enjoy my Saturday off.
I'm looking forward to actually a few quieter days during the month of May, because we've been very busy with gigs and comedy shows and things like that. So, you know, maybe just need to get in, cook myself a nice sticky toffee pudding and just chill out in front of the TV for a few nights.
Did you get the train to London on Saturday?
We did get the train to London on Saturday. Yes, it was okay.
Work all right?
Well, you say work all right. Yeah, it was all right, actually. We weren't too bad. Coming home, the train was really busy, but Southeastern, the only company I would trust less to run a lush up in a brewery than the National League, and they still insist that everything's okay. So what can you do when it comes to that? But no, so it's okay. Is what it is, isn't it? But yeah, we survive. Have you got any film? I'm sure you said about Wonka, but I'm sure you had another film review you promised us 2 weeks ago.
No. We'll start with Blue Lights. We've watched. Have you watched?
Do you know? I tried again. I tried to get into it again. Second time I tried to get into it, and I just can't get on with it, mate. I just can't get on with it.
Like that, really good. So that's what we're watching at the minute. So yeah, apart from that, not much else, I think, on that basis. But yeah, we need to get some new TV. But again, it's just that strange time of the year, really, at the moment. So
of course it is.
Once the football's all over, we can sort of settle down and do it from there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. It's become quite an epic, but there's been so much.
I always thought that when the end of the season, where basically all the teams relegated, nobody's, it'll be a quiet show, but it's not really now, is it?
Well, no, the FA and the National League are doing their absolute level best to make it extra complicated for us, aren't they? So, you know, you just have to go from there. But yeah, it's madness, absolute madness of everything that's gone on this week. But yeah, thank you everybody for listening to this week's show. As we say, we do really appreciate it. Thanks to our guests for their time. Massive good luck to everybody in action this weekend who needs a result. Hope you get what you want. And of course, these playoffs next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about lots of Kent success when we speak to you next week. You can find us on Twitter at Kent NL Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, search for Kent Only Podcast. Search for the group as well, Kent Only Football Chat. Get involved there. You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at Kent Only Podcast. I'm at JohnFitz81. Matt is at Matthew_Gerard. We found the other day that there's an AI thing that if you're on Apple Podcasts, you can actually, it types up our words. It didn't cope well, Matt, when I got to our Twitter handles. Didn't understand that. And it also couldn't spell my name. You know, it was always with a H, which is not the way to do it. You should know that by now. It's JohnPhipps. That's right. I've got two names that none of you can spell. Anyway, as I say, massive good luck to everybody over the weekend and in the playoffs, which kick off next week. And we'll bring you all of the news when we speak to you next week on the Kent Only Podcast.
It's the end of the season, but still 2 weeks to go. Good luck to all our teams. Can we get them all winning through the playoffs?